It's a lot of interesting things to think about. Here, would you be so kind to...
I'll do my best. I'm not very good at this. I always get the cursed stuff.
Then screw it up. That's fine.
Are you good at this, Jackson?
I didn't put out the candle or anything. It just...
Let's see. It's just falling to shit here.
Totally falling to shit.
Oh, God.
Part of me does miss the old self. Because even if I didn't have the answers, I thought I did, and that felt good. I gotta say, I knew what to do, when to do it, and I'm just like, well, shit.
Yeah, that sounds like you've graduated from Mr. Natural School.
Yeah, I came here, you know, for some insight, I guess, and perhaps get some resolution, but I honestly have, like, no more clarity. Despite the fact that the conversation was great, like, really seemed to, like, you know, answer a lot of my questions, but, like, I just... So no more clarity as to what to do. You know.
Yeah. If someone is wishing to get a sense of what to do,
we're in the wrong place, right?
Well, that's lovely. I mean, why not? And there is something to do. Of course there is. To say there's nothing to do is, you know, just as glib as insisting as you must do something.
Well, no, I mean, like, is there, like, the right thing to do? Like, this is the best course of
action. Well, now you're qualifying it.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
That's,
I mean,
that's like,
but that's what mind does. It heaps a whole bunch of insistences on the simplest of questions. And so you never really get to it. You never really get to it because the mind doesn't want you to get to it. Mind just wants you to continue to heap a bunch of qualifications and caveats onto your present experience so that you can remain under the influence of hallucination.
Glutton for the pain, man.
It's just a glutton for imagination. It doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You could say the mind is, you know, the inner child that will not heal. And heal as in H-E-E-L and H-E-A-L. It won't do either.
I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, yours is good to go.
Down in that wine glass?
Yeah. Well, thanks for opening the bottle.
Good wine, by the way.
We have our friend Terry to thank for it.
Very nice.
Yeah. Terry, if you're listening, and I know you're not, thanks for the wine.
You know what else you could be? Looks so frank, that's obviously a yes.
Hey. That's some nice wine.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, drawn from a lovely wine glass.
What grapes are in there?
Red wine?
No.
It's a little strange to kick back in a way where you simply observe the doing occurring. The doing occurs. And that includes everything that you have to think about it. The... All of it. Yes. Yeah, nothing can be excluded from how this is expressing itself as it's expressing itself. It's all included. And you can look at the curiosity of your present experience through how many lenses? How about infinity? So as you look at the present experience through the infinity of any lens that comes to mind, then this refracts or reflects to itself, luminously to itself, through whatever lens it happens to be wearing. And you're not in control or in charge of the lens or the way the light passes through the lens that shines on your consciousness, that facilitates the creation of a universe where there is none. Compulsion is not an affliction of the self or the background field. Compulsion is merely an accoutrement or an affliction of mind itself. We might think that, oh, I'd like for my mind to be unafflicted. Well, how can it be? The mind is affliction. It is OCD. Yeah, everyone is a special ed kid. Our hats off to special ed kids, yeah. Of course. No political incorrectness in this world. Mm-hmm. Rastafarian. Yeah. Okay, so let's just say the entirety of mind, which is the presence of, you know, reference, self-luminous reference appearing right about now, is of the nature of mind. We don't even have to say what it is. It's like you understand the entirety of mind without having to be lectured about it or being told various things about it. You understand through firsthand experience the entire cacophony of mind. And what is it about you, within you, that's capable of apprehending flawlessly the entire canopy, cacophony of mind? What's that? That's not mind. Mind is a symptom appearing in your pristinity. If you chase mind, or as attention chases mind, it's really easy for attention to appear to adhere to mind and then self-identify. So attention left alone by itself doesn't have anyone to play with except itself. And that's an interesting rabbit hole. But attention, you could say, is easily loves to play with the nearest puppy, which happens to be mind, because mind is evocative and humorous and crazy and seductive and comparative and argumentative and, of course, always right, and loves fear and apprehension and loathing and justification and affection and grand acts of heroism, profound emotivity. Right? All of that appears in mind. It's like it's fucking drunk, as soon will I be, with itself. Well, I'm always drunk with myself, but now through the help of wine, I guess.
It's kind of like it likes a good story about itself.
It does.
Just like anyone likes a good story about themselves. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, oh, tell me a story about myself.
You know, like there's no such thing as bad. What is it? Or
right.
What's there when there isn't a story?
Yeah, that's not a what, but what's a good question. Yeah. What, where, why, when, how? What are the qualities of your present experience when no story is told about your present experience? You're qualityless. It's like, why is snow white? Well, it reflects, right, everything. So it looks white, but is it white or is it clear? Or if you look in the middle of a snow mound on a sunny day, it has this incredible blue hue like the sky. Yeah. So your present nature, what is it? If you have nothing to say about it, find out what that feels like. Cultivate it, chase it, stalk it, hunt it down, kill it, put it over a flame and eat it, for God's sake. Don't go vegan on the truth. Hunt it, stalk it, kill it, skin it, bleed it, eat it, then drink the blood. Yeah. Go whole hog on reality and take it to task. Don't be so timid.
What seems to be there, if you can entertain that space for a little few moments, is the drama that's surrounding us, the stories that are self-creating. There's an observer position.
You know what? The observer position congeals with the content. Without the content, there's no observer position.
The observer is a story.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Right. In other words, there's what's so, and we have, for good reason and with all due affection, suggested that this is of the nature of, you know, an observer operating at a sufficiently nuanced frequency that things appear to it.
Mm-hmm.
Not the case. Because without a story told, without content, the observer turns out to be empty-handed. Yeah.
Like stations of the cross.
Uh-huh.
Are there successive positions of revelation?
Yeah. This is at least as clever as you are. Maybe even more so.
Maybe.
Right?
I think you're right.
Yeah, don't underestimate it.
This smart fucker.
It may be even cleverer than me. And so it can figure out how to solicit or create the seduction of the presence of an observer.
Mm.
So it continues to have something to say about itself. Boom.
Well, not doing is really difficult. So it seems.
Yes. Yes. If it's taken on as, let's say, a challenge, then it's more than difficult. You can say it's impossible. Because
mm-hmm.
once we've fetishized it, it's too late. You're already doing. Yeah. Yeah. So make this about nothing. Even you could say the Zen or yogic invitation to not doing. How about fuck not doing? Gives a shit.
Let it ride.
Let it ride. I mean, it's riding you, you know. Mm-hmm. When do you think you're going to get off this bus? When you want to?
There's something about seeing that you're not doing it while all the action is going on that does seem to make it then feel like you're not doing while you're doing. Like it doesn't seem maybe as strenuous or, you know what I mean? Like, oh, stuff's happening.
You know how much marvelous symmetry and symptoms will appear to you in the routine of your life as you pass through the water slide and get denuded. All kinds of subtlety will arise in the rhythm of what you call your, you know, so-called daily life as the floor gets pulled out from underneath you and everything turns out to be a serendipitous wonder field of not self. And it's not even that necessary to be greedy for that. Because the moment you're greedy for, you know, things to show up in your so-called life in a certain way, then again, you know, the reflex to fetishize what you think this is occurs about that quickly. And then we're on a road of what perdition, which is to compare. Yeah. Comparison keeps us alive as mind. Comparison makes it appear as if something is happening. It's happening to you. And you have a really good story to share about it. And that's cool. You know, no harm, no foul, as they say. It's just that, it just so happens to be that the ambiguous holism of what this is happens to be exactly that right now. This is Ramakrishna's room. This is the Bodhi tree. This is whatever circle of fire Jesus may have sat in. This is it.
Waiting for my mother for an appointment today. And I was like reading this article on my phone just to try to get a grip.
And, it's a good way to get a grip. Help me, Nirsagadatta, help me. It's like Mr. Wizard, right? I hear you.
It's like you're in a cage and the tires are on the cage and then the cage is free and then you're riding the tire or something. You're the wave or you're the tire.
Yeah. I'm confused. Am I the tiger or the wave?
Yeah, help me out.
Help again.
Mind can fast. It doesn't have to. It's not a precursor. But mind can fast. Be on the lookout for it. And it does so more easily than we imagine. And you could say with whatever degree of repetition may be our karma to fulfill, the more we play around with not knowing as a social event, then the texture of recognizing yourself without content, without genesis, you could say strengthens. You get more accustomed to yourself with a fasting mind. All transmission is is the conveyance, the shared appreciation of a fasting mind. Some people might stare at a photograph of their guru, if their guru is, say, realized, you know, or whatever. And just the image of the guru in that presence, alive or deceased, will assist in a harmonic of fasting mind. Or tratak on a candle, right, focusing on candle flame. Or jhana practice, right? Subtle breathing practice. Or the teachings of the yoga of radiant presence that help you feel the mystifying radiant nature of your present experience. and the ambiguity and the irresolvability of that present experience. Everything is a way in. How about everything that's showing up as in right about now is nothing but fasting mind, the revelation of the Godhead? And the reason that we refuse it is because there's an activization of, oh, I've got a better idea. Dear God.
I've got a lot of better ideas.
Dear God, give me a quick tea. Give me a quick timeout. I've got a better idea. That's what mind does. I've got a better idea. Listen to this one. Yeah. Ooh, I got a better idea. Do you? So fasting mind is a phrase that helps us to recognize that this, whatever you feel like calling it this evening, it could be inner peas or inner bean or a glass of wine or Rigpa, I don't care what we call it. No, tonight reality is going to be renamed Natura. That's what we'll call it. We'll call it Natura. It's like being in one of those cool space movies with a different language.
Solaris.
Yeah. Natura. That's right. We're going to the Natura tree to put on a bender. Mind appears in presence. Reference, reflection, belief, superstition, knowledge, comparison, measure, temporality, spatiality. They all appear in presence, or they appear in natura. They can do what they please. They can just fuck off as far as I'm concerned. Or not. Or maybe I'll get really interested in something like fear. What's going to happen to me? Oh, I have such regret. That bastard. Or not. What could be fun is that stories could be told or repartee could be engaged in, but not interfere with fasting mind. The notion that you have to sit quietly with your eyes closed or open or rolled up or whatever is somewhat trivial.
Why do your eyes naturally roll up anyway?
Yeah.
It's weird, huh?
It is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Someone must know. So as we make slow and steady and fitful, call it progress, with the texture of fasting mind, then it's all contributory. Then the reason to come together, hang out together, share some snacks and sneezes together is, in, you could say, kind of a celebration of fasting mind. It's a small church. Don't expect it to be standing room only anytime soon. But that's it, because if you show up to have this kind of a conversation, if it turns out it nourishes you somehow, then, you know, you're in the water slide. tumbling about and solvent. It's taking everything away. Without taking anything away. Isn't it fun to have even just a few moments of like, well, I sure don't know what to do. And better that, I sure don't care that I don't know what to do. Cessation of self is cessation of destiny, cessation of continuity, cessation of having come here with something, or wanting to leave with or without something. It's not to discourage anyone from having some ideas or, you know, a good story to tell or a curiosity about the nature and texture of consciousness. It's even a more subtle way of engaging with a fasting mind. And we're not insisting on some kind of cessation or absence of thought. No, it's better than that. The textural confidence in what's absolutely present, without having to know what's present, catalog what's present. There is a very powerful force, which is the force of distraction, the force of, convergence, divergence. It could go either way. But that force is the force of association. Which qualifies the present beatitude. And that's a powerful force. I mean, you qualify the present beatitude, and all of a sudden it or you are about something. And
you're on a mission.
You're absolutely on a mission, either toward or away from. Yeah. Yep. And concomitant with this powerful force, the powerful distracting force, har, 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 is, well, fuck me, myself. Without quality. Same moment. Same platform, same train even. You go to the front of the car, you're in distraction. Or you go to the rear of the car and you're in transcendence. And the front of the car and the rear of the car are not separate. Distraction and transcendence happen to be the same. But the recollection of distraction, you could say, begets the appearance of more distraction. The recollection of transcendence, curiously enough, begets the signature, the aroma of transcendence. And each moment, you could say, is absolutely unconditioned, so it's free to recall what it pleases. It can recall qualities instantaneously, a whole universe full. It can also recall nothing at all. And they're not different. You're neither entrapped by distraction, nor are you entrapped by nirvana. Nirvana can fuck off. We think that distraction's a big deal, so we have a lot to complain about. And therefore, we think that nirvana would be all the shit, because distraction sucks. Nirvana would be cool. Well, nirvana can just fuck off. So then we don't have any more news. We don't have any more juice to complain about our distraction, because we're no longer thinking that nirvana is going to be some preferred resolution. Everything and everyone can just fuck off in a good way, in a loving and compassionate equanimous and hippopotamus kind of way. The reply to everything that everyone says is correct. How? What else could it be but correct? Because I'm not here long enough to even agree or disagree with you, so I'll just say correct and move along. Unless, of course, you feel like picking a fight. That's fun, too.
Yeah, I didn't quite get the power of your premise statement correct and so on. Second or third time you said it.
Sweet.
I see now.
Yeah, boy, it can really get under your skin. Oh, it's potent. In one way, correct can appear to be as a dismissal of someone else. But it has a deeper implication. It's a more powerful tool. When you say correct, it's the dissolution of yourself. That's where it has a lot of magic. I mean, dismissing other people, that's not too difficult to do, right? I mean, we do that 24/7, ourselves included, masters of dismissal. But when we say correct, then that lets everybody off the hook and resolves us of any adhesion, any karmic adhesion. That's the magic. That's the big juice.
Yeah, that's what I came to. I was like, I can't say with 100% certainty that, like, you're not wrong or you're not right. Like,
no. Yeah. Wrong and right. Wrong and right. Wrong and right. Oof. But still, you know, you can be irritable when things are wrong, and gleeful when they're right. No harm. There's no expectation that one, you know, sits on a stone smoking a beedi that's gone out 30 years ago and just doesn't know. There are people like that, you know. They must be a lot of fun to hang with. Hey, dude, hey, your beedi went out. You know, and they're just sitting there like this, and you're like, hey, dude, hey, your beedi went out, man. And they're just like, no reply. So you go for it a third time. Hey, dude, hey, your beedi's out, you know, and you wake the Godzilla, you wake the dragon, and they turn and they look at you and they just fry your entire consciousness with a glimpse, and then they turn back to their beedi. You know, you got yours.
Oh, yeah, that happened today, I think.
Oh, yeah?
It just sounds really cool. I want it to happen to me.
It is cool, yeah. Hey, dude, your beedi went out. You know, you're toast. Isn't it wild to hear yourself not think? hanging out like this is, well, it's a gift. It's a benediction. It's truly an opportunity for time off from oneself. Let's just say that's the most we can wring out of it. We're all distracted from meditating and, you know, doing japa and doing all the Hail Marys that the good father told us to do since last time we went to confession. We're easily distracted. But we come hang out like this, it's like, oh, wow, I can actually commit to 2 hours of not being anybody at all. Or an hour and a half, whatever it is.
Are we on Eastern time, or? So how did you meet Peter Brown?
Oh, through some bad luck.
I had watched some of his videos on YouTube like that years ago.
I was trying to avoid him at all costs, but it didn't work.
And where's this little thing, Dosan, being held?
Most likely in this room.
I hear you.
Depends on the, you know, number of people that express interest.
So, looking
like
so far, do we have to like run a stadium or anything?
Yeah.
That would be very fun.
Peter Brown at the Stabler Arena.
I like the
What was that Christian gospel preacher dude? He could fill a stadium, right? The real famous guy.
Joel Osteen.
There are many preachers that fill
Billy
stadiums.
Billy Graham.
Joel Osteen.
I never heard of him. Must not be that good.
The Dalai Lama
type
stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they don't serve wine.
No. And it sells out. I don't know why he wanted it. You know, he'd be down with some wine. I don't know.
Well, you wonder about the nature of demonstrative renunciation. Like robes or celibacy, yeah. Things like that. Like, so what? Who cares? It's like you make such a big deal about the rhythms of life that you should withdraw from drama and family and intercourse and murder and divorce and more murder and...
You can piddle with little kids.
Yeah. I mean... well, As if some kind of renunciation from what we call the world is advantageous somehow, or that a culture should be built around renunciation, like monkey see, monkey do, Buddha.
It's like funny because that's all like this is. It's like really just trying to renunciate most of what this is, and then you know maybe retain some tiny make-believe portion.
How about reality is self-liquidating from moment to moment? There's nothing even to renounce.
Yeah.
So if the Buddha had any fucking sense, and I'm beginning to doubt that he had any at all, he would have said, hey, dudes, like, this is self-renouncing. Go about your business. But instead, they created this horrific monstrosity of a renunciate culture. But it wasn't really his fault. That was already present in India, right? And for who, for how long, you know, was some renunciate culture created? And you wonder about the genesis of renunciate cultures in the, you know, the life of the species, right? The sociology and anthropology of the species, right? I mean, renunciate cultures were present before the church, right?
Well, it seems pretty simple. It's like the average animal goes out and gets food and, you know, mates, and that's it. But
yeah,
the humans, like, you can do that and more. And you're like, but it's still not enough. And it's, so you're like, all right, let's try the other direction.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like, you know, it's logical.
All
process of elimination, you know?
All is a contrivance. Buddhism is a contrivance. Hinduism is a contrivance. The Vedanta Upanishads is a contrivance. And yet they're all miraculously reflective of, you know, the genuine nature of reality. How could they be otherwise? But you don't wake up necessarily through the vehicle of those superstitions. You might have a better chance of waking up by avoiding them altogether. And though there's plenty of evidence of, you know, folks waking up within the body and bosom of those traditions.
Yeah.
As card-carrying members.
You can't really say either way, I mean.
Well, I can, because I'm crazy.
Well,
yeah.
Sure, you can say, but not with confidence. Well, not with
facts. No, that's gone.
Who's to say which one is more successful? And who's to say that you're not, like, already, you know, successful when you just happen to be inside of that framework of that organization, and it's like you would have been successful either way.
That's right.
Yeah, I was like reading something about the default mode network, which is like this blah 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 narrative that you always have, but then you say, oh, they recently found like a psychedelic, some psychedelic seem to dismantle that, but then so does aging. So it's like, oh, okay, well,
yeah.
So is aging, you know, and we're all aging. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I've got you, of course.
I have to have more wine. Fuck, what bad news.
That's the hard revelation I've been in. We're all aging.
So we're all dismantling our default mode network, hopefully. So.
Nice.
It's the, again, the dodo bird verdict. All have won and all will receive prizes.
Good to go.
Something over there, like marching. Did you hear that?
Yeah, there's like, moving around. Yeah.
Was it me?
No.
There's like a squirrel.
Is there a mouse or something? Oh, you're something's over there marching, dude.
I totally hear that.
Oh no, it's got its own inner peace and energy. It's a whole other dimension over there, having its own nice guy song. And it's like, yeah, we got wine and
it's the creatures on the shore.
Over here, dude.
Mics always show up when you're worshiping Ganesh. They're companions.
Have you heard anything about the nanobot skin?
Well, except the things that I've seen in science fiction movies. Hmm.
In your eyes?
What I've heard is that that Silicon Valley is on a tear.
Yeah.
To be all the smart drugs they're taking.
That, the Christ story.
Why do we need them to interfere? We already knew that. What's so?
Well, have a machine do it.
Have a machine rise from the dead? Yeah, it's like starting your lawnmower in the spring. That's like an ascension, you know, rising
that's
from
what
the dead.
All about.
Yeah.
Like nootropics, maybe? Smart drugs. I'm not familiar with that. Nootropics. I think that's the term. It might be something different, like different type of brain-enhancing drugs.
Krishnamurti warned about the coming confluence of artificial intelligence and animated robotics.
Yeah,
He can. It's not going to slow down.
He said this, you know, in some of his later talks before he passed. He said, "Watch out."
Is he a Concord Orange? Or, I mean, not a Concord Orange. How old the other
one? It's coming down the slide. Your water slide.
2001.
Uh-huh.
And it's unstoppable.
Elon Musk will save us.
Yeah, thank goodness someone will. Well, you could say every generation would like to imagine that, you know, it has the right of manifest destiny. So the species might even think that it has.
Yeah, that's not the mice.
No, that's the giant mouse.
Every generation is a new revolution.
It's like a Hanuman visit.
Yeah, Ganesh,
Hanuman. Phew. Right,
wine. I like wine, I think.
And
bottles.
Oh, spirits.
They're like, finally, this party isn't so boring.
Spirits are, yeah, they're like, oh, God. Good.
Snacks and wine.
Nice little visitation.
Sorry, nice.
Yeah.
We're loyal to our, you know, present form or formulation. And I've lost a little bit of steam lately, but there was a movement that was excitable for a little bit. I haven't heard much of it lately. Called the, something like the acceleration. Which was indeed welcoming of the marriage of human and, you know, robot-assisted enhancements, including the strides made in artificial intelligence.
Well, I wonder, lots of people are interested in that.
Yes.
That Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah.
Kurzweil.
Kurzweil. Yes.
And his whole
being funded by Google.
Okay, sure. They have the money to do it.
$500 million.
Yeah, they have the money to play with it. Absolutely. Yeah. It's like the Terminator. The Terminator will come true.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good metaphor for the clash of the hegemony of the surviving species could turn out to be, you know, a hybrid consciousness.
I say let the machines win.
Yeah, just lay it down. Yeah.
We are a parasite.
Right, total parasite.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. You guys go for it. Kill me or just live my life out. I'm not going to bother you. Best of luck. Inherit the earth, inherit the wind. You have my blessing.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I get to imaginarily eat a steak.
Yeah. Could you make me famous?
Yeah. Well, in the Matrix thing.
Lots of money.
In the Matrix thing, that, you know, that was the conflict between a total unicity of machine culture that lived according to some, you know, bizarre inner authority, a unicity of consciousness, and the human, which prides itself on being biologically, emotionally, preferentially individuated, right? So the humans made a deal with the machine culture, thanks to Keanu Reeves, that the machine culture would permit the humans to more or less thrive or survive in whatever numbers they were permitted, you know, to do, and not be completely decimated by the machine culture. That was the win, that the humans would continue to enjoy specificity and individuation, and therefore the, you know, pleasure and preference of procreation. Okay. And that the machines were like, okay, you parasitic fuckers, all right, no problem, we'll let you live. They were like, yes. It's like Picard overwhelming the Borg with Data's assistance. Yeah. Taking out the Borg fuckers, Like Sylvester Stallone does so well with a big fat automatic weapon.
I do enjoy your pop culture references.
Yeah. So it's fun.
It's too antithetical to our basic Puritanism that all this is about is absolute indulgent joy.
Yeah. If that's, that we like make that an issue at every turn. It's
like
really funny.
Not allowed. It's not okay that this is just about resplendent, carefree, radiant joy.
Yeah.
That can't be it. That would be fucked up.
Where's the suffering?
Yeah, really, this has to be about me getting over on something.
24/7.
On myself or somebody else. Right? Me surviving in the, you know, the great glory of some kind of accomplishment. Like, no. It's actually about selfless, resplendent joy that has no name. Go figure.
I mean, the fact that that's shocking for most people to hear is
well, that's,
enough evidence.
That's right.
That something's a little off.
That's right. What did you say?
Are you insane?
Are you insane? It couldn't possibly be that. It couldn't possibly be itself. No, it's got to be something other than itself. I insist. Okay. Correct.
Correct. Whisper lunch.
Yeah.
Pour me another one. Just like the other one. I think it has to be a two-bottle night in order to start slurring. I can't break through on one bottle. Wow. Every resource and every reference that we can possibly imagine is nothing. You don't have anything to lean back on to define yourself. It was like the perfection of our dear Shailene Woodley, is her name?
Mm-hmm.
Woodley, right? I don't want to spoil the most recent installment in the, what's it called?
Divergent
series, the second half of the Divergent series.
The first movie sucked, man.
Was it?
Could have been a little better. Yeah.
Well,
I'm like sort of a movie nerd, so
I get
hard on things.
I thought it was
alright. I'm easily entertained by any sci-fi, even if it's got Bela Lugosi in it.
And usually Scone.
Yeah. I'm just a pushover. I'll believe anything. Did that really happen? Oh. Well, it comes to an interesting fruition in the second installment.
Mm-hmm. That whole like genre just seems a bit played out for me.
Well, they all came out
like
the same thing.
Yeah,
like there was
like,
another one; it was all the same. They put everyone in the little categories.
You mean they compared the vampire franchise to this franchise, and you could see all the same archetypal characters line up?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's like,
Jude Law, right? Jude Law. Yeah, that was good, man. Ethan Hawke went to space and had plenty of Jude Law's blood to prove it. Mm-hmm.
You want a good movie, you gotta watch Revolver. It's a Guy Ritchie film, but it's like not just like
another movie buff. You guys should get together and hang out and talk about stuff with it.
Yeah, watch Revolver. I think it's 2005 Guy Ritchie. That's my favorite movie.
Has anybody seen Interstellar?
Mm-hmm.
I'm meaning to do.
I saw Interstellar when it just first came out.
Mm.
In California in an IMAX theater.
Mm. Oh, this guy.
Take that.
With that, with Peter Brown's matter.
Wow. Some of that things?
Oh. Mm-hmm. I am committed to pumping myself up at every opportunity.
Suck it.
Suck it. Bam!
Well, what were you going to say about the movie?
The Divine Mother sets you free when she's good and ready. That's how it goes down.
Is that what it's about? Jesus. Is that what it's working out? Your non-divine mother?
Not that again.
I'm breaking out my mother issues again, once again. That's right. So you can see that the profundity of distraction is on you like flies on shit. Pretty much 24/7.
Non-stop.
Yeah. Because this is effusive and evocative and playful, imaginative and refractive and fractal and highly pixelated and everything else that you can say about it. It's just unbelievable the profusion that we are confronted with from moment to moment. And one of the things that's in the field of profusion happens to be the nature of discursive rumination. So just because discursive rumination appears in the field of profusion, we think I am, which is just, you could say, an organic consequence of attention being given to discursive rumination. Discursive rumination can't come to any other conclusion except, oh, me. It's not capable of having another conclusion other than, I me mine. That's okay. That's fine. Discursive rumination only has one destination, no matter what train you get on. They all go to the same place, which is I me mine. The Beatles wrote a tune about it. And so any effort or attempt we try to make for discursive rumination to deliver something other than I, me, mine fails. It's not your fault.
I'm trying to get enlightened, though.
Well, you still should try. Don't give that up at all. Just recognize along the way that trying to get enlightened through the portal of discursive rumination or attention being given to discursive rumination is just I, me, mine. So that's obviously not the way. You're good. You're like any of us. We're in a maze. You've taken a certain turn. You're like, fuck, man, this is I, me, mine. There's no way to break into the center of this thing because every conduit I take through discursive rumination is I, me, mine. I've got to find another path. Another portal. Yes. I must find another portal, then discursive rumination and the continuity of the false sense of I. Rock and roll. It's a nice challenge. Simple one, actually, once you boil it down, once you make a reduction sauce out of it, it's a kind of a simple challenge. Well, fuck, everything that's appearing in discursive rumination is I, me, mine, and that's not the way. Whoa, fuck, I'm fucked. God, what do I pull out of a hat? What other portal might be possible or present for me to sojourn into, which doesn't end up in I, me, mine? Whoa, that's tall order. Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because a lot of times that impulse arises and I remedy it with something that resembles I, me, mine.
Yes, of course.
It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That got you far.
Really, boom, oh, God. Ran right into I, me, mine. That's smarts.
Here's the portal. No, it's just I, me, mine.
You could say life is just going through every tunnel we can find until we find the one that, you know, doesn't bump into I, me, mine. And so the Divine Mother is the one that's really holding the keys to this, you see, because she is the mother of all distraction, the mother of all presentation and profusion. You can't deny the Divine Mother because she is the matrix of all profusion. So the smart yogis, they're few and far between, but the smart ones, they worship the Divine Mother, because if you even garner the slightest bit of favor, she'll lift the gate. Mm. And they knew this. Yeah, but she's very crafty, because if your supplication of the Divine Mother has to do with Mother lift the gate, she's got you. She's got you. You have to convince the Divine Mother that you're in it out of love of her supreme. That's the trick. I know. Of course. I get it. And this is all metaphoric, so you find your own way to it within the context of your own karma. Yeah. So if you're trying to please the Divine Mother because you want her to lift the gate so that you can get enlightened, she knows what you're up to.
Yeah, give me something.
Yeah, she knows what you're up to, and she's like, that won't appreciate your affection and your recognition for sure, but no, that won't do. You're like, God, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do to get out from under I, me, mine. So life pretty much whittles you down to nothing. It whittles you down to just zero. And if you're lucky, as you go to zero, you can turn your face back to her and say, Ma, I just love you. I'm done. I apologize. It was rude of me to suggest that there was something other than you here now. I'm in it just for the love. And she's like, right, correct, she says.
I'm not playing, let's make a deal anymore.
Yeah. She says, correct. And then the veil is lifted. You see? That's how it works. And of course, she's very generous, so that she gives you both the means to suffer, the great whittling down, and she gives you the means, which is truly beyond our capacity, for an affection which has no boundary. That's what she wants from you, from me, from us, from this, from herself. She wants the affection that has no boundary. And once she's whittled you down to pure fucking zero, you might discover the capacity of affection that has no boundary. Then the veil is lifted. But between now and then, have some wine, a few, you know, sweet dried vegetables and talk it over. What else can we do? We're all in a halfway house.
Make a deal.
Yeah, this is the halfway house of I, me, mine. We're all fucked silly. And we realize that the journey that we're on is the discovery of an affection that has no boundary. And we're fucked up and conditioned and full of regret, stupidity, and anger, so it takes a while. It takes a while. Fuck you. So, okay. Let the solvent have its way with you. That's all. Let it take you out. Go to zero. When you go to zero, there's nothing left. You don't have a quarrel with the Divine Mother anymore. You don't have a hidden motive, a hidden agenda. You're not bargaining with her anymore. You're not supplicating anymore. You're so down at her feet. Completely zero. Ma, it's been a pleasure to love you. I do apologize for all of the guile that I've suffered from this long. She's like, bam, you're free. Veil lifted. That's how this works. Again, within the context of your karma.
Yeah, it's just vague enough to last a million lifetimes.
It is. She knows her shit, man. She can really wrap you up into a long, long routine, a long relationship. Yep. Mm-hmm. See, aiming for enlightenment, it turns out, is not that good an idea. Because you'll fail, because she's onto you. Plus, the reason we're interested in it, typically, is as an ameliorative, as a substitute, the lesser of two evils. Or to write books and attract cash and attention. So she's on to you. She's like, no, that won't do. I want you all to myself. I want the entirety of you. Not an agenda. Not a supplication. Not an alternative. I want all of you. And so she flatlines you to zero. And that's the revelation, you see. Now enlightenment is not a fetish any longer. It's not something to get as a gift, as the result of supplication. No, it's stranger. Yeah, you're released from any adhesion with discursive rumination. Mm. Wouldn't that be fucked up?
Mm.
Wouldn't that be cool? She releases you from identification and adhesion with discursive rumination.
As soon as you say that, I have more rumination about what it would be.
No problem. So does she. So does she. She's, yeah. No, she's like, oh, let's think about it. Let's think it up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When the Buddha referred to cessation and nirvana, depending on the Pali or the Sanskrit, the cessation was of adhesion, not profusion. Emptiness turns out not to be empty. Emptiness is profusion. Profusion is emptiness. The penetration is the adhesion. Released from any adhesion with discursive rumination. Through no effort, through no vow, no preparation, no renunciation.
I don't need to embrace my inner being or contemplate my inner pee.
Well, it's always good to pee.
Yeah. So you don't let the chair.
It's good thing you said that through no effort. Because my mind's instantly like, good, I will just calmly let all these thoughts go. I can do this.
I'll notice all the arisings and passings I possibly can. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll embrace my inner being.
She assists us in exhausting all of the reflex to get over on this. That's what she's good for. She's good for whittling us down, so she exhausts all of the reflex to try to make this about something, to try to apply ourselves.
I guess that's why when people hit so-called stream entry, they lose that, right? I
mean, yes. That's what stream entry means, right?
I'm good at something then.
Yeah.
Failing.
Good at failing.
I can do that, right?
Stay there. Yeah. If you're good at failing, God, you're like...
Eventually I'll get it, right?
Way ahead of the pack. Yeah. Yeah. Fail like a banshee. Yeah. It's a little bit...
Is the way to go.
It's counterintuitive to the popular culture.
Yeah. Well, yeah, one time I asked you what if you're deluding yourself? And you're like, well, you don't know, but it doesn't matter. You can't matter.
You can't find an authority here, including the one that you imagine is you. That's exactly what the t-shirt says. Well, what the hell then? Yeah. Well, what the hell then, Sangha? Yeah, that's right. What the hell then? You're not comprised of agency. You're not made of consequence. What the hell then is all you got? It's real fun to feel the subtle genesis of who you took yourself to be slip away.
I find it more like this internal screaming.
Yes, that's good.
I guess that could be fun. I don't know. Yeah.
Screaming's good?
Oh, yeah, I read a tweet from Jenna McKinley. It's like having a really bad stomach flu and just expelling everything out.
He's big on that kind of somatic demonstrations of the process of enlightenment. That's why he's kind of popular. It's the same kind of folderol, not unlike Eckhart Tolle's pain body.
I feel like I'm teething. Is that a thing?
Yeah, teething's in. You're in.
Well, it's not like that for everybody, right?
No. Jed McKenna wrote some really very evocative and funny books, overemphasizing, you could say, somatic and psychological demonstrations of the unfolding of enlightenment, as if it's, as if that's the way it looks. You know, it's like, that's fun. I mean, it's a fun view. But then people have come to this room, actually, in hopes of finding Jed McKenna, as if I had anything to do with him. And I disappointed them so terribly, probably to my great benefit, they didn't come back. But I think, to me, they almost seemed like they had some kind of masochistic agenda going on, that they wanted to come into a place that would ruin them demonstratively. You're like,
Is it like the sadomasochism of enlightenment or
something? I've seen it. Especially the Christians that could turn to Buddhism. Christians that turn to Buddhism are kind of the worst, because especially the Italian ones. Italian Catholics that turn to Buddhism are the most dangerous. Because then they get...
There's sort of a pleasure seeking law, you know, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They go all pleasure seeking in a certain kind of masochism. But that's, you know, that's the self-flagellating, right? Italian Catholic thing.
Maybe, you know, I don't know. I hear all those priests and mistresses there.
Well, that's why the flagellation feels so good afterwards. Yeah, they don't even have time for a cigarette.
Both ways. It's extreme in either direction.
Darling, stay. Let's have a cigarette. Okay. I've got to get to the whip.
Yeah, you go some underindulgence to overindulgence or something.
Yeah, maybe. There's a boomerang. That's the thing. Kind of
hey, this is libidinal, right? The entirety of creation is, I mean, exploding unapologetically with libidinal, right, energy. And repetition, repercussion, penetration, and the cycling of, you know, energy and matter through portals called black holes. Yeah. That's why, part of the reason why these, you know, renunciate cultures, I don't know, I think they're kind of psychically outdated. Archetypally outdated. They've run the course. They're of the same. They're of the same mind as the misanthropic cultures that they thrive in. Yeah.
Typically, the Buddhists, they're not necessarily lifelong monastics.
No, Western.
So, like Catholic.
Yeah. Well, Westerners have all been. Many Westerners have been allowed to take robes and practice the art of demonstrative renunciation for a period of time and then exit that commitment. Mm. I can't speak to whether that's also that same kind of revolving door is present in the Asian cultures that practice it. Mm. I know scholars who would know the answer to that. But we don't talk.
This was a call-in show.
I wish it were a call-in show, yeah. Yeah. Caller, you're on.
Long time listener.
Yeah.
There's like a Gorgeous George call-in public access show.
I don't think so. But it sounds like a hoot.
Yeah, who was called in. Gorgeous George is like, I think it was like a pro wrestler, like villain.
I remember Gorgeous George,
had a public access show where you could call in, and he had, like, his, like, team had, like, all these wild opinions, and, like...
That's neat.
People just called in and really got this guy riled up, and it was...
Oh, great.
Hilarious on live television.
Like, did he wear, like, a leopard skin...
I forget trunk. What his costume.
He did. Right? Gorgeous George had a leopard, and he had blonde hair, or like platinum blonde hair, combed back, and he had a certain kind of Ken doll beauty about him. Yeah. All muscled up. Nice.
Was he like during the heyday of all the big things?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wild. Yeah. Did you find the mouse? Find a mouse?
No. I am the mouth. I'm looking for Jesus.
I am he as we are they as I am she and we are all together. Goo goo ga-choo. See how they run like pigs from the gun. See how they fly.
I never knew they were real big into, what's his name? Maharishi Mahesh Yogi.
The Beatles?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I don't think they were that big into him, really. I mean,
they just went that, like, one time or something?
Yeah,
well, George Harrison, you know, drifted away from Maharishiism more toward, you know, Krishna consciousness, but not necessarily a purveyor of ISKCON. Right? Mm-hmm. And the others more or less, you know, just, man, what the fuck? They say that Sexy Sadie was John Lennon's gesture outing the Maharishi.
Sexy
Sadie, what have you done? You made a fool of everyone. Yeah. So some say that that was written.
Isn't Dear Prudence about the apparent sister?
No, I thought Dear Prudence was actually about someone's dog.
Well, one of them is about the apparent sister who would meditate all the time.
Yeah, I heard that, and she said got kind of crazy from it.
Yeah, and I think he tried to come on to her, too, I think.
Well, I thought Helter Skelter was about the Charles Manson, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that Mia Farrow's sister? Who died at the hands of Charles Manson?
Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate.
Sharon Tate on Polanski's wife.
Yeah, that's good. Oh, I'm having like a Forrest Gump moment.
But I think the people denied that was about Charles. Oh, no, that's right. Charles Manson said that it was a message from the Beatles to go crazy and kill people. They played that song.
That's a good way to play it.
Yeah. And they said, no, it's about a big sliding board.
Number nine. If you become naked. Number nine.
What was that about, that song?
I don't know. Best LSD in town.
Or sunshine, yeah, shit.
Number nine. What was the topic tonight?
ISKCON.
That's a good topic.
ISKCON?
That's what I initially was talking about, the Hare Krishna movement.
Oh, okay. I've never even heard of that.
That's like the acronym for the foundation's name.
Oh, okay.
The inner super, what's it called?
International Society of Krishna Consciousness.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's the Hare Krishnas?
Well, that's one. That's the branch that nefariously sold Bhagavad Gita's at airports.
Oh, okay. The ones who have the vegetarian buffet.
Just have... That's exactly the group.
The guy with the leg sitting on the chair. Well, that's why they were created, so that good vegetarian buffets could be available in the airport.
To expect some kind of idealized persona to accompany the sloppiness of your own realization is a bit naive. Your realization is wild and cantankerous, and it's made of you. It has everything that you're made of in it. It's a customized broth. It's a stew, right? And for sure it's fermented and fermenting. So it will make you groggy. It's like a ratatouille. Yeah. And this way, you're off the hook from thinking that you need to emulate someone that dresses in ochre robes or white robes or lives to 115 and eats, you know, a perfectly a diet made of yogurt and pistachios.
I don't
understand
that. That's not like yogurt.
Yeah. That sounds terrible together, though. I mean,
no, they've been together.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So what's when you see when your mind fetishizes a certain period, or your mind fetishizes a certain kind of celebrity, or your mind fetishizes practices and fruits of practice, or preparations and purifications associated with practice, then you become entrapped by that.
Well, you're kind of back to being like a person in a world with stuff to do and a place to get.
Well, there are a lot of yogis, Western and Asian and Indian and elsewhere, that pride themselves and sell themselves based on yogic accomplishment and yogic knowledge and yogic dissemination and yogic healing, or, you know, yogic events, demonstrations of, you know, whatever, enviable magical powers of some kind. And this is all entrapping. We're not trained very well in, you know, the culture that we're a product of. We're trained, in a sense, to be somewhat self-oriented. And that has to do with, let's say, competitive encouragements, that having to do with education and employment, or attracting a partner and having offspring so they can do it all over again. So there's like the repetitive quality. So the culture is not really very forgiving or instructive in terms of tuning us to the possibility, if not the birthright, of absolute liberation. The culture doesn't value liberation. It values repetition. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking of Western culture versus Eastern culture. You think that because they're sort of not as egoistic, that it would be different over there?
They're plenty egoistic. The Indians and the Japanese and, you know, the Koreans, the Vietnamese, everyone is profoundly egoistic in their peculiar way. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Chinese are, like, strangely egoistic. Like this little scuttlebutt recently about making sure that everyone that's dancing needs to follow government-approved dance moves. What? And the grandmothers are fighting back saying, would you just give it a fucking break?
Really?
Would you please give it a fucking break? But no, the Chinese are so crazy that if you're doing public dancing, that it has to be government-sponsored and government-approved dance moves, which are the most efficient for your health and well-being.
Oh, God.
You see, because any movement of artistic individuation within the Chinese culture is threatening, right?
They come with an attack and they shoot you down if you start doing that.
Then if a bunch of grandmothers don't follow the government-approved moves, then the tanks will come.
They're like hyper-focused on efficiency in some weird way. Like if you're a kid that has a certain talent, they like push you, you know, you can only be that talent. There's no like...
divergence.
Yeah, like, but it's like really like bizarrely focused.
That's
on
right. Abnegation.
Yeah, basically.
Candor. That's right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That was the trial. That was the trial that the main character had to go through, is that she had to survive the simulation for each of the five or six groups. Yeah.
Did she survive in August?
I can't say a word about it.
No, I haven't seen that.
But it had a certain kind of closure, what can I say? Like, I'm easily entertained by teeny bopper sci-fi movies.
That's very true.
I love her.
Like, that was really good, and I watched it and you're like,
The Hunger Games?
Yeah, I just thought the first one, I loved the concept, I just thought it needed a little something more.
You know, I missed the third film.
Yeah, I haven't seen the third one yet.
Beth went to see it, I didn't see it, and I'm like, don't tell me that I weaned myself from the Hunger Games. but maybe I have.
She's out of that whole thing now. It's different. What's that?
She grew up.
Jennifer Warren?
Well, she beat this the system in some sense. So now they're in rebellion mode.
It's nearly as beneficial to talk about celebrities as it is to talk about ourselves.
Well, there are, you know, are considerable.
They are. They, yeah, no, they're.
Well, it's not like a god.
Mm-hmm. There's a revelation at hand. The revelation could penetrate the myth of continuity, the myth of repetition. You could be spontaneously invited to see through a set of eyes that you didn't even know you had. It's the novelty and the brand newness of your present observation, which turns out to be the destination of your observation. This is nonstop brand new, unconditioned from the so-called moment that may have just passed. Evocatively and profusely effusing in consciousness as consciousness with no actual demonstration, no actual destination, no place to occupy. Though it doesn't quit. And as your mind learns to fast, you can just feel the ascension of it. Your present experience amounts to nothing more and nothing less than ascension. Even though you didn't start in a place, nor are you going to a place. Whether it's a lifting up or a falling through, not that important.
So it feels like both.
Yes, it can. So all that's present is really is profusion. Profusion and attention. That's it. It turns out that profusion and attention are not two. That's why the master might say attention is experience. Because profusion and attention are not two. And you're not actually an intermediary. And the only way to feel it, even though it's all that's ever occurring, is you could say through the vehicle of a mind that begins to relax sufficiency from adhesion to discursive rumination. And you're like, whoa, I'm not thinking about this shit, but it's still here. I'm sure feeling it. And what the fuck is it made of? Well, when you get down to the bottom of it, it's like, fuck, it's profusion and attention. And holy shit, profusion and attention are not separate. Fuck, it's just profusion, attention. And I was like, what? What? And there's no intermediary. That was easy. Mm. It goes good with wine, too.
It's like there's an eye on that wine.
Mm. There's a sigil on the bottle. The all-knowing eye. That's why we call it Natura.
The all-knowing eye. What an asshole. So what that symbol's about. It's like, look out.
It's real nice that you don't need this to be something. You don't need it to be about something. You sure don't need it to be about you. Mm-mm. It's a plasma. It's an absolutely undifferentiated plasma in which profusion as perfect differentiation occurs. But if you glimpse deeply into any symptom of profusion, what will you find? You'll find plasma. So you can't actually find something on the other side of attention. You can't find anything on the other side of attention as you peer into the profundity of differentiation. You just find more plasma, which is appearing as an infinity of profuse individuation or diversification. You're truly in a loop of disembodied profusion.
Feels like some kind of loop.
See, the attentivity doesn't abate. It doesn't quit. And the profusion also does not abate. It does not quit. And the attentivity and the profusion are one and the same. But it's a different nuance of, let's call it identification or recognition. When you see this and feel this as attention and profusion, as a plasma, full of differentiation, but you can't ever find anything on the other end of the apparition. So anything that you say about yourself or insist upon is a freezing of apparition. It's like, oh, you've made a fact out of absolute malleable ambiguity sufficiently that you can suffer. One has made a fact out of dissolving ambiguity with sufficient oomph or durability or confidence that now you suffer. Oh, because this is something. It turns out to be my crappy life. Everyone knows that.
We're a little creature looking for a reward. Stirring in the kitchen. Yeah, little mouse.
Friend of Hanuman.
I know,
friend of Ganesh. Can you suck on glass?
No.
No? God damn it. I'll just pour it into my eyeballs.
That is a nice wine.
Let's get some more.
With cheese.
Okay, next time we'll serve it with cheese. You come to a thing and maybe you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll come to this thing and someone will say something cool, or it'll be about something, or I'll get something, or I'll figure some shit out, or I'll get some teachings going on, or something. And then you realize, fuck, There's just nothing. God damn it. I went there to find something, and all those fuckers, all they do is, I don't know what they do, but it sure feels like nothing. And I don't know what to make of it. I'm not even sure if I'm disappointed or not. I think I'll go next week.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, because what the fuck? So what did you learn at your class today?
I don't know shit.
Mr. Goodbar says, go fuck yourself. Do it today. When that sense of inner authority, which creates externalized authorities, starts to liquidate, then you just don't know what you're up against. Turns out nothing. Turns out to be nothing. But the collapse of authority is tantamount to the collapse of adhesion to discursive rumination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody knows nothing. Nobody's Genesis story is true. You don't have to wait around to be forgiven by Jesus. It turns out you are Jesus. Sorry about the bad news. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a popular statement. It could take the church right down. Yeah. No.
You would definitely be burned on the cross for that one.
Well, burned after you were quartered and tarred and strewn about and minced. Burned would be the last thing they would do.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't want to speak too loudly about this stuff. Or for shit sure record it or put it on fucking YouTube.
Spanish.
Oops. Oh my God. No. Keep it low key. No one in this room is going to be invited to the Science and Non-Duality Conference, I'll tell you that much.
It's actually the keynote speaker there. I was wrong.
But this is the craving, you know. This is truly the craving of one's autonomy and one's being. Is it, you could say, to occupy your experience with absolute autonomy, beholding to nothing and no one, no God, no authority, no force of creation outside yourself. Nothing that would even dare to judge you. Your dignity is intrinsic. It's not conditional. Conditional dignity is the way of sorrow. Intrinsic dignity is the way of nirvana. And fuck nirvana.
Keep disappearing.
That's right.
Son of a bitch. What happened to steady state theory?
There's just fractal luminosity.
Mm.
And it's not even that. Even that's it's a best we can do when you look kind of subtly at it. Whoa! Fractal luminosity. Not really. You can't take a stand, you see. You can't occupy your present experience as the doer, as the decider. as a platform or a plateau. You're just liquidating. And all that appears to you is perfectly intimate and perfectly novel, full of song and story. It's a musical. It's fucking Oklahoma 24/7. Or not. It's quite fine to be in your ordinary consciousness as much of the time as you're in your so-called ordinary consciousness. It's not like you have to have some kind of cathartic event that turns the tables on you so that you're more in an evocative and insane consciousness more often than you are in ordinary consciousness. It's not that big a fucking deal. When you're in ordinary consciousness, whatever that might suggest, you sip from that. And when you're in the recognition of your divinity, of your uncompromising autonomy, sip from that. When you're done with preference, it doesn't matter whether you're acting out of some kind of OCD ritual to soothe yourself or whether you're swimming with the fishes. Gives a fuck.
Most likely A.
I mean, you know, hit the bar, then OTB, then get to a meeting. It's fantastic.
They get knocked off because they OTB and swim with the fishes.
And swim with the fishes. Because you've been betting against the wrong team. That's right. I've lost track of time, thankfully. Oh, look at that. It's 9:30 exactly.
Funny how that works.
That means that we'll be closing down. Thank you for joining us and listening in if you're going to be attending to the recording. We love you so much.